Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, the federal government's response to the COVID-19 pandemic in aged care, not so good. We're going to catch up a yarn now with distinguished Professor Sarah Charlesworth from RMIT University. Online, Professor Sarah, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. I'm well. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program and thinking of you guys down there in Victoria and the world we're living in at the moment, isolation. You guys are still locked down, yes?
Yeah, we are. Pretty grim.
Pretty grim. And look, the other thing that's grim is the federal government's response to COVID-19 pandemic in aged care. Speaking off air there, seems like the government has dropped the ball in this department, yes?
Well, this is certainly a finding of the Royal Commission into Aged Care Quality and Safety. This was one of the issues it considered at a special hearing on COVID-19. It basically found that the federal government didn't really have a specific plan in aged care and that they hadn't learnt the lessons that they should have given the initial outbreak of COVID-19 in a series of three main Sydney-based residential aged care providers, and that the initial outbreaks in Melbourne that, given, you know, their deadly impact, because we've had quite a few older people, over 500 aged people die here in Victoria.
Well, that in itself should put more emphasis on focus on that department, yes?
Well, it should, and also because I do a lot of my work around the workers who work in aged care, who we tend to forget about, but
yes.
There's actually been more cases. There's not been deaths, thank heavens, but there's been more cases, over 1,600 cases of COVID-19 acquired by aged care workers, and most of those infections are acquired in aged care settings, so that, you know, we're not even providing safe workplaces for people to come in and do their work. So there's been a bit of a passing the buck between, certainly between the Victorian state government and the federal government, but it's very clear, and the Royal Commission found this, the federal government is the regulator, funder, and is in charge of what happens in aged care. The Victorian government has said in response, well, hang on a minute, don't blame us.
Exactly.
The 178 homes that we're in charge of, not the federal government, we've only had very few cases of COVID-19 and not a single death. So it's been very different in the both for-profit and not-for-profit homes that are operated through the federal government system.
Well, we've always had, not a great deal of focus on aged care before COVID-19, but COVID-19 is virtually, oil always rises to the top. It shed light on the situation, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It's really laid bare the kind of structural faults that we've got in the system. So it's pretty opaque. We spend quite a bit of money, but not as much money as some other countries in other developed countries do on aged care. But it's very unclear what happens with that money, so that providers don't have to say to the government, we've spent X of percent of the dollars that you've given us on care staff. And what we know is that there are not enough staff to do the very important work of aged care, and they're very lowly paid, and we tend to employ them on kind of very casualised short-term contracts. So,
we're talking about our vulnerable people, our elders, aren't we?
Well, incredibly vulnerable. I was actually just looking, Trevor, at the data for comparing Indigenous with non-Indigenous Australians, and overwhelmingly Indigenous elders are much more likely to use the formal aged care services, particularly home care services, than in fact non-Indigenous Australians, which I thought was very interesting, really.
Yes.
So it's really important for your community that we've got good quality services that are properly staffed, and that includes not just with your frontline personal care workers are very important, but properly staffed with nurses.
Exactly, yep.
Enrolled nurses. We just don't have enough, and infection control has been a major weakness in the system. Now, this is a problem even before COVID, because in most institutional aged care, you can have an infection or a virus like, a flu go through. You could also have a gastro outbreak go through. You really need excellent infection control. And really, the Commonwealth Government hasn't focused enough on making sure that providers have in place these necessary protections for our elders.
And so when you look at it, it's an industry that the government should invest in, you know, when you're looking about pay rise or empowering our people to, especially our young people, to be working with our elders. It's work that's not recognised or, rewarded for the work that they do.
Yeah, it's exactly right. I mean, aged care workers are paid about what you get paid to work, as a shop assistant. And infinitely more skilled than that. You're doing everything from wound management. You're sitting beside somebody who might be in at end of life or in palliative care.
And that can be emotional strain on a worker, couldn't it?
Huge emotional strain. And I think we haven't kind of acknowledged the extraordinary work that the most aged care workers do under very poor circumstances.
Yes. So, look, they did drop the ball. The ball can be picked up again, is what you're saying.
The ball can certainly be picked up again, but we need a whole lot, I reckon, more regulation.
Yep.
This is considerable additional funds. We need to make sure that they're not going to the profits for these for-profit companies that are now involved in aged care, but this money is being spent on our elders, and it's being spent on good working conditions for workers, because after all, the conditions of work are the conditions of care. And so if you have got good quality work, you will have good quality care.
Exactly. Thank you very much for sharing, Professor Sarah. All the best to you and your team. Your family stay safe, and we'll yarn soon.
Okay, lovely to speak with you, Trevor. Bye.
Bye-bye. Deadly yarn there. Professor Sarah Charlesworth, her name is. She's from RMIT University, and her chat is regarding the federal government's response to the COVID-19 pandemic in aged care. As she pointed out, they dropped the ball a bit, the Australian government, the federal government, in regarding this department, this area, and about love and respect in our elders and support for the workers as well, working in that industry and getting paid shop assistants' wages, so to speak, for the job that they do, which should be rewarded financially a lot higher compared to what they're receiving. Have your say. Yana Strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416. Yana with the ball, you're on Trevor Tim, Trinity Trevor Murray from the Curry. Live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, you know, BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. Give me a call and have a yarn, 1-800-422-416.
And yeah, we are the Briscoe Sisters, and thank you all for coming.
Got it. Almighty God, in the Bubu Kiru Kari Bama Bama Bubu Kuru Wole.
A very good morning. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live on First National Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM Bama Group Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Israeli Service. You can have your Sabre call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, the federal budget 2020 has been released. And in regards to what we've just been through, and we are still going through, COVID-19 has put a spin on a so-called budget. We're going to catch up a yarn over Dr. John Vaz, Senior Lecturer at Monash Business School. Very good morning, Dr. John. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So, look, a very important conversation regarding the budget. It's a different budget like no others, thanks to COVID-19. Where do you think we sit in light of COVID-19, the pandemic, and regarding the budget and the economy?
Well, I guess depending on where you sit right now in terms of COVID, I'm in Victoria, so my perspective is a little bit different because we're still not out of the woods yet. But, you know, I remain optimistic. The central issue is whether what the government's doing in its budget will support us return back to some kind of post-COVID normal, meaning we all, you know, we have activity in the economy, people buying and selling stuff, people working, people going about their lives. And that'll take some time. Now, the government's announced a number of measures around investment, tax benefits, all kinds of encouragement for different employers to hire people and so on. But a lot of it's quite intense over a two-year period. My concern is that we need a longer period of support from the government through its budget, almost in a structural sense, because what we face is what we would call, you know, as economists, a W-shaped recovery. So if you think of the letter W with a little point in the middle, so we are sitting at the bottom of the W in the first part.
Okay. Right?
And the government will pump money into it, so we'll rise to the middle part, but then we'll drop off again because it's not sustained by the spending in the right places for a sustained period of time. So that's one big concern I have.
Okay.
For example, the tax cuts they're offering to the general population will benefit people who are generally with high income and wealth. And that's by nature a function of the tax system because, you know, the more money you make, the more tax you pay. Therefore, if you get a percentage cut in your tax, you'll get more money.
Sure.
But my point is we want that benefit of those tax cuts to be spread more widely.
Yes.
Now,
are they mainly looking after rich people is what I'm hearing?
Well, I wouldn't say look after rich people per se. It's just that the way, the effect, that's the effect of it, because if you're paying a lot of tax, you'll get a lot of benefit. If you're not paying enough tax, and, you know, people are at the bottom of the social scale, won't be paying as much tax, they won't get as much benefit. And they're the ones probably struggling with loss of jobs or means to provide for themselves. Because bear in mind, the government's also withdrawing the support for JobKeeper and so on. And one of the missing things in the budget package is it's silent on what happens to, in the long term, to the job seeker, unemployment benefit, in other words, which is going to fall to quite a low level. And they haven't actually addressed that in the longer term. New Start is what was called before.
Yes.
It's very low, hasn't been addressed at all. So the government's silent on that, and that concerns me because the unemployment we have right now, and it's getting worse in Victoria in the short run, it took in the last recession in the early 90s, by the Treasurer's own words, it took close to 10 years to get that employment under control. Now,
well, you think that we'd learn by previous experiences, wouldn't you think that?
Well, they are taking some measures to try to shorten the recovery period, if you like, by providing all these incentives to employers to employ and so on. But I think, and that's a good thing, but the thing that worries me is that a lot of the budget, and I say budget, it's funded through borrowings, is being used. It's a one-off opportunity, right, to spend this much money.
Sure.
And it's being used in a way that I don't believe will give us a sustained benefit in the longer term. For example, the tax cuts benefit behind the town and companies and so on. There's no company tax cut per se, but it's benefiting people who, you know, who are high income or have the means and so on. There's a lot of company benefits, by the way, by way of accelerated depreciation. They can write off stuff very quickly by spending money and so on capital goods, you know, investing in new equipment and so on.
Speaking of investment, it would be a great idea to invest in big industries that employ a lot of people.
Yes, and they're doing that as well, but it's not enough. I think I would rather see them, for example, spend money in strategic industries rather than just offer them to selected targets. For example, why not invest in things such as new industries that we can grow into the future, you know, sustainable energy type industries.
Okay, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Or for reprocessing minerals, investing in industries that add value to our minerals rather than just dig the stuff out and send it offshore. That kind of thing is what I'd like to have seen. But, you know, everyone has a wish list, the government has made some judgment, and you have to respect that.
Sure.
My only concern is whether we get a longer-term benefit, and hence this W-shaped recovery I talked about, or short or long-term, it's just, you know, support from the budget is what I'm concerned about. See, one of the things we've assumed, in the budget, is what we call trickle-down economics, you know. By giving tax cuts to people, they'll, you know, the people get the most savings will reinvest it and so on, and there'll be more jobs.
Put the money back out in the economy.
Not sure that's the case. One of the concerns I have is people who get a lot of tax cuts and benefits will simply bank it and not necessarily spend it.
Hold the money. Because the money's not circulating.
You know, because they're worried about... Correct. They're worried about whether, you know, they'll have security in the future, you know. Mm-hmm. And I call that fun factor, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. So a lot of people will be reluctant to spend because of the risk in the economy going forward. You know, poor people, if you get a $20 or $30 saving per week or whatever, you're going to spend it anyway because you're probably tight and you need to buy it for food or whatever.
But, exactly, yeah. But you're running on a tight budget anyway.
Correct. People who earn more are always spending what they need to spend. Any savings they get or benefits, they're probably going to put that away in some form of saving or investment, but they're not going to necessarily invest in job-creating ventures.
No, exactly. Well, they say if you save same amount of money, if you save in the next 5 years, same amount of money you save in the last 5 years, where are you going to be?
Yeah.
Well, nowhere.
So, I mean, for example, why not in the... when you target money for, you know, for companies, they've given, and this is one of my, I guess, hobby horses, so they've given the ability for companies who are turning over less than $5 billion, the ability to write off their assets. You know, they go out and buy a new car or a new piece of equipment, they can write it off straight away for tax purposes. Now, that means less tax revenue. The point is, there's a lot of companies who are foreign-owned who will benefit from
money. Money's going offshore.
Number one. And number two, you've got this issue of the assets that they purchase, the equipment, comes from overseas anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would like to see more investment, and maybe I'm biased, in the education sector and the services industries, which are a large part of the economy, yet a lot of the benefit will go to capital goods type industries or construction and so on. And you know, Australia's a very large service economy, so I feel there's a kind of a misalignment of the spending to stimulate longer-term returns for our economy. So that's one of my concerns, is who benefits from the asset write-offs and so on.
Well, the so-called people holding the reins or making those decisions, we're talking politicians, they haven't got the knowledge.
Google, for example, turns over less than $5 billion, so technically they could benefit from it.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's right, you know. So it's about looking after the future, yes, but also keeping us all afloat in the here and now.
That's right. You know, I mean, for example, I'd like to see women have been hit really hard and so on. I'd love to see more support for childcare and so on to encourage people back in the, women back in the workforce. They've done something,
yeah,
but they haven't done anywhere near enough because women got hit pretty hard. They haven't addressed Victoria at all. I'm not saying this is a Victorian, but Victoria's 25% of the Australian economy.
Yes.
We're still going backwards, and there's nothing specifically in the budget that recognises that Victoria is a bit of a basket case.
Yeah, exactly.
Compared to the rest of the economy. And so
a case of head in the sand.
You know, they've spent money on infrastructure projects in other states. And probably Victoria needs more injection than anyone to get it restarted. If Victoria doesn't get restarted, it would drag the whole Australian economy down.
Yeah, exactly.
And Victorian government here stuffed it up with the hotel quarantine and all the rest of it, but we are where we are, right?
And you're not saying that you are biased, but it is what it is, you know what I mean? And they need to focus in on Victoria. They're still in, you guys are still in isolation shutdown.
Correct. So, you know, the other sector that's been hard done by, you might say, is the entertainment and arts and so on. They've shrunk enormously. The education sector, there's been no, JobKeeper or any of that for those sectors. I'll tell you the university sector, only because I know it well.
Sure.
10,000 or more jobs have been cut out of there. The university sector provides a lot of export income for Australia.
Exactly.
And yet there's been, and also research for our future competitiveness. So we've lost money there. They haven't protected that sector. And I can pick other sectors as well. I mentioned arts and entertainment and so on. And those people will probably never work again,
They
go on to other things because they have to. So we lose a lot of services. Tourism is another one,
So where do you think the government's, their thinking is at? Because it sounds like a case of blind leading the blind.
Well, I'm trying not to be critical because it's a big thing.
Of course it is.
But I just come back to first principles. You know, what would benefit in the long term versus trying to, put the economy on steroids in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
And what is political is that the government said this. They criticise, and I'm not a, by the way, I'm not a Labor Party person or a Liberal Party person. I vote independent.
Sure, but you're talking fundamentals here. You're talking the good system of KISS, Keep It Simple, Spunky, the positive man I am.
So my point is the government was critical of the Labor Party when they did their investment during the global financial crisis. And this is a much bigger crisis.
Yeah.
So I'm happy for them to do that investment, but they need to spread the money over a longer term. We've got to borrow a lot of money. We've got to make sure the benefit comes over a longer period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, some simple numbers, right? We're going to be in debt for around $1 trillion in the next 2 years. $1 trillion, that's half our economy, right?
So our kids and our kids' kids will be paying that debt back.
Well, it'll be here long after you and I are dead, my friend.
Yeah.
So if you borrow long, you should invest long, is my point.
You don't
put a long term debt to go on a holiday.
No,
you don't have the holiday. You're still paying off the debt, right?
So
you want to be using these investments, these borrowings.
We'll get the money working for us
longer term. Correct, but working the longer term.
Longer term,
because and the reason the government says we're different this time, they're doing it differently, and this is political to say, well, we're investing all our money in a very short period of time. We're not investing in continuous debt sort of thing.
No, long term.
Well, all you're doing is borrowing a lot of money, investing it real fast, but the debt stays here a long time.
Yeah.
And the benefit may not be there for a long time. That's what I'm saying.
We should buckle up and get ready for the long haul is what you're saying.
Yes. And use that money for long haul things rather than sort of doing tax cuts that you hope will all...
Band-aid solutions.
There's a couple other things that I'm concerned about. Population growth and immigration.
Yes.
Our population growth will slow for the first time. To give you a simple number, immigration is going to slow by two-thirds, okay? It's reduced by two-thirds. Mm. So for the first time, we'll see a net negative overseas migration. Right? Now, why is this important? Population growth has helped us sustain an economy because there's more taxpayers and more people at birth rate.
More people at the table, bringing money to the table.
So, you have future taxpayers, right? I remember the joke that Peter Costello made years ago. You know, they had a baby bonus, and they said, have one for your family and have one for the taxpayers.
Yeah, exactly.
But
exactly.
The population growth comes from a lot from immigration, and that's important. So that's something we need to think about, how to stimulate our economy, given we've got these other challenges. So, a lot of things happening here. I hope I'm not...
No, but thank you for your quote and just shed some light on the situation and what I picked up there. And our listeners, long-term investment for the long haul and so very important. You've got to work, get the money working for us, you know, and we are for the long haul. We've got a big debt and, you know, with the old phrase, debt, do everything but think. Well, we need to start thinking.
Yeah, I like that.
But thank you for sharing, Dr. John.
No worries.
And all the best to you, and you stay safe, and we'll yarn soon, my friend.
No worries. I hope you've had this, found this useful.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dr. John Vass, his name is Senior Lecturer at Monash Business School, and his expert quote on the federal budget 2020, and a lot of work to be done. Yes, we are in debt thanks to COVID-19. We were in debt before, but a bigger debt now thanks to COVID-19. The future looks dull, so to speak, but strong advice to the government is need to invest and invest for the long term and not for short term, not for here and now. Borrow money, yes, but invest for the long term. And we need to tighten up our straps and we need to do what we need to do and keep the money in Australia. There it is. Have your say, Yana Strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Yana with the Baldy One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from McCurry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And we're live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Just Radio Service. So give me a call, let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416. Yeah, too deadly. Now we're going to have a chat with John Robinson, Chair of the Queensland Sentencing Advisory Council, and talk about, well, the announcing the launch of an animated video that explains sentencing in the Queensland Murray Court. On the line, John Robinson, very good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, Trevor. Thanks very much for having us on.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So announcing the launch of an animated video that explains sentencing in the Queensland Murray Court, just give us a bit of background in regard to Murray Court for those who don't know what the Murray Court's all about, please, my friend.
Well, the Murray Court's been in existence since 2002, but in recent years it's been greatly expanded. And it's a court that is designed to be a culturally appropriate court that respects and acknowledges Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures. And our video shows how you can get in contact with the court if you have the misfortune of being caught up in the criminal justice system. And it only applies to people who identify as Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. At the moment, it only runs in the magistrates' courts. The person has to plead guilty or intend to plead guilty will be on bail. And then the program usually takes about 3 months. And it involves the defendant and his or her supporter or lawyer interacting with relevant elders, relevant to that person's particular cultural practices.
Yes. So the Murray Court guides the defenders towards the good light of life, yes?
Himself or herself, yeah.
And so in this animated video, how can people see it? Is it on YouTube or webpage?
No, it's on our webpage. And if I just give you the address, would that be sufficient?
Fantastic. If you could, please, that'd be good, John. Thank you.
I really encourage both people who are involved in the criminal justice system, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and their elders and community leaders to have a look at it because it's really, really effective in explaining it. So it's www.sentencingcouncil, all one word.
Sentencing Council, all one word, yep.
Yeah, sentencingcouncil.qld.gov.au. Or you can just type in Queensland Sentencing Advisory Council and you can scroll through to find it under resources. But it's part of a series that we've got going under the title of Doing Justice Differently.
Mm-hmm.
We've done one on the Queensland Drug and Alcohol Court, one on the CourtLink program, but this was especially aimed at Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people because, as you know, Trevor,
yes.
They represent about 3% of the Queensland's population, and in the adult prison population, over 30%, and then in the juvenile population...
We need to bring those numbers down, don't we, John?
We do, and this is part of trying to encourage people to use the Murray Court process. It's really been expanded from... It started in Brisbane, and it's been expanded to places like Townsville and Mount Isa.
Here in Cairns as well, we've got Murray Court.
And Cairns and Rockhampton, which, you know, services Warrabinda and that, places like that. So it explains it it's in an animated form because of COVID we couldn't use actors.
Sure.
But we used the First Nations production company to make the video, and it's really fantastic if you've had a chance to look at it. So I'd really encourage people who are listening to your program and who have some connection with someone who may be involved in the criminal justice process to have a look at it.
Yes.
And to encourage more people to use it. Because, I mean, ultimately the effect is it diverts people away from sentences like imprisonment.
Sure.
Short terms of imprisonment. So that's a great thing.
And don't care how small or big the crime is, it's a tool, is what you're saying, and it's a supporting arm, so to speak, to help our mob who get caught up in the justice system.
Exactly, Trevor, and our sort of independent research shows that what happens so often is, particularly with young Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people, they have one interaction with the criminal law at quite a low level, and then they might have another and another, and then, you know,
escalates.
Before they know it, they're doing 1 month in prison. And once you're in prison, it's hard to come back, as I think well understood.
Sure.
But it's once you've had a prison term, it's really, really hard to come back. So this is a really important way of diverting people. It's not age specific, but obviously predominantly right across the offender cohort. They're mainly young people under 30.
So what would be the goals for the Murray Court?
The idea of the Murray Court is to engage in a culturally appropriate way with a particular defendant, and to work out in consultation with the elders on the Murray Court and the senior members of the community and the magistrate an appropriate culturally suitable outcome, which might include performing programs, getting involved in programs.
Yes.
It may be drug and alcohol programs that are specifically designed for First Nations people. It may be counselling, that sort of thing. You know, a lot of the programs are not really designed with cultural matters in mind, and that's what we've got to change, and that's what the Murray Court is trying to do.
Yes, and it has its it's also supports the wider community contribution. Well,
sorry, Trevor, what was that?
Murray Court is a wider support for its contribution to the community on a wider scale.
Exactly, and you know, it brings in the community and the senior elders who actually participate in the process, and you know. It means that the Murray Court magistrate is much better informed when he or she comes to sentence that particular person, instead of, you know, just being part of 50 or 60 cases that just race through the magistrate's court in a morning, say in Cairns. It's diverted off into this, and it's given a lot more attention. I mean, it's resource intensive, but ultimately, if you can keep people out of prison, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people out of prison, you know, A, that's much better for the community, and B, it means a lot less expense because it costs the community an enormous amount.
It does, yes.
To keep people locked up, and it's almost always not money well spent.
Exactly. And when you look at the defender, the support there is, well, second to none. And when you've got, I always say black on black, it just helps soothe the situation and helps the individual look at a vision for the future. And look, made a mistake, not a bad person, just did a bad thing, and there's light at the end of the tunnel and making it right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and this is no criticism of lawyers, but often they're just so overburdened with so many cases that they don't really have the time to explain to their client, what's going to happen. And, you know, I had that experience when I was a judge, you know, when I was doing work up in Cairns and out at places like Cunnamulla, you know, where it was clear to me that the person most... You know, the defendant, the person who was going to be sentenced, didn't really understand what was going on. So this is a way of trying to make the criminal justice system more, culturally appropriate.
Yes.
More able to respond in an individual way to a particular First Nations person who's in trouble with the law, rather than just treating them as a like a sausage machine.
Putting through the system.
And it's been sort of evaluated quite a bit.
Yes.
And of course, it's all over Australia in various forms. And it's extremely effective. This way of doing justice differently is very effective in stopping people offending.
Yes.
So,
and the respect our people have for our elders. I mean, the elders are at the table and are part of the Murray Court, and so there's a term of respect and understanding and support. They feel the support.
Yeah, and I'd encourage people like me, who come from a sort of a white privileged background to look at the video.
Yes.
As well, because it explains how important cultural factors are to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and there's a lot of ignorance in the community, and a lot of it is not badly intentioned. It's just ignorance, and
exactly.
This is a way of informing and educating the whole community, not just the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander committee, and it's a terrific video, if I say so myself. It was put together by us, professionally, but we had tremendous input into it from our own Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander advisory panel.
Yep.
And that panel is chaired by Bevan Costello, who's a Waka Waka elder from Cherbourg, who's a member of council. So they deserve a lot of credit for... Mm. The professional way in which this has been put together. But there's also, you might be interested, Trevor, and your listeners might be interested, we've done a video focusing on making sentencing terms easier to understand, and the actual participants in that are members of our panel. So they're Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people on our panel.
Yes.
So explaining what bail means, what a sentence means, what a fine means, because
all the legal jargon is too much sometimes,
Exactly.
You break your jaw trying to pronounce some of the words.
it's a very, very confusing and frightening experience,
particularly
for someone who, they just really don't know what's going on. That applies right across the whole community, and, I experienced that myself as a lawyer practicing in criminal law, and then when I was a judge. So we hope this is some small way in trying to turn it back and provide understanding and educate the whole community about.
Exactly. John, the elders at the table are getting educated on the legal system as well, and then they can put it, in layman's term to the defendant or talk to our mob in our way, the way we communicate, to make that communication picked up.
Exactly. Fantastic. So an elder, might come up with an idea that no lawyer would think of.
Thank you.
Really relevant to this particular person, and that may enable you know, a program to be fashioned or changed.
Lovely.
So that that person will really respond to it. I mean, if you have, if you're doing a community service order and your community service supervisor flies into your community once every 2 months, you know, it's not going to really have as much effect as if your own elders in your community are engaged in the process.
Yes.
So, and that's part of our aim. It's an important central part of our...
I love how you guys are reaching out, which is fantastic, and working with our mob and having those elders at the table. So to all our Deadly listeners out there, the launch of the animated video, you can check it out online, sentencingcouncil.qld.gov.au. Check it out, have a look at it, and you highly recommend that, John. Thank you so very much, my friend.
Thank you, Trevor, and thanks very much again for having us on your program.
All the best to you. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. A Deadly Yarn, John Robinson, his name is, look, former judge, and he's chair of the Queensland Sentencing Advisory Council, and they've launched a new video, animated video, so do check it out, your mob, for if you've got family that way inclined and mixed up with the justice system, or just for your own education for the future, and hopefully you don't need to know of it, but if you know family members or friends out there who are in a situation in the legal service, and they can check at the Murray Court. That's in Queensland. And not sure if they have operation, probably a question I could have asked John, in regard to other states and territories as well. But for a mob here in Queensland, do check it out. Send us in council.qld.gov.au and check out the animated video for your own education. All right, your mob, have your say. Yarn up strong. Got about 12 minutes left on the program here on National Talk Black. Yarn with the Bully and Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from McCurry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And we're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. As BBM and Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to the National News Radio Service. Give the Murray call us, have a yarn. 1-800-422-416.
Just a fool without you. Now that you have found me in you, I put my faith in you. People say this won't last. We've been together now many years, it's past us, and I got to tell them now. Faith in you, I put my faith in you.
Yeah, faith in you. Got faith in you, mob. Give me a call, 1-800-422-416. That's by Namaka Karawa here on your daily program. The Ball, you're on. Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, National Talk Black, live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. Have you saying yarn up strong, Bumba Brippin Media, 98.7 FM across the nation. Thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Going to catch up with George on the line. George, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, George. How are you? Yeah, good, thanks.
Good, good. How well, you? I'm good, my brother. Good. Before we start, let the mob know who your mob were you from, George?
Yeah, Eru. Darnley Island.
Darnley Island, yeah. Represent. Thank you, my brother, for coming to the program. What's your topic today? What do you want to yarn about, George?
Native title. I found out on the weekend, the last couple of weeks, that a PVC described body corporate in our communities. Also, land councils are representing people that... for landowners.
Mm-hmm.
I had an issue with where I come from, and some traditional land of ours has been allocated to Torres Strait Regional Council, also TSRA in Torres Strait.
So you're saying the land has been handed over?
Because it's been dogged, so the PBC, they have, they represent people on the island that are the landowners.
Mm-hmm.
And because we live down here in Cairns, we don't have much say in on our place.
Okay. So you're living on the big island, and for decisions being made up in the island, which is still your island, you're left out of the conversation, what you're saying?
That's been happening for a while, eh?
Okay.
And I didn't know what was going on until I sort of, like, researched into it and found out that there's some things that we didn't know about.
Sure.
Because of the native title. And also what Queensland government has done to earmark those islands and even communities on mainland in regards to social housing. Now, there's a lot of questions been coming up.
Yep.
But I think this is something that we need to clear up.
Yep, okay, yep.
Because we have a lot of landowners living in Australia.
Yeah.
As we say. And, hello?
Yeah, I'm hearing you. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yep. George, lost you.
Hello?
George. No, we'll try and call you back, George. That's George calling now, having his say about decisions being made on the islands, Torres Straits, and Torres Strait Islands who are living on the big island here on the mainland. I got no say in the matter, or not at the table, or not in the conversation, is what I'm picking up from George. We'll try and get George back and continue that conversation. Here on your daily program, National Talk Black, got about 6 minutes left on the program, and we've got the news coming up very soon, so I hope we can get George back or continue that conversation. And we'll yarn up stronger. I think we've got George back there on the line. George, you there, George?
Yeah, speaking.
Yeah, gotcha, brother. Yeah. So, yeah, so what you're saying is what I'm picking up, brother, is decisions are being made in the Torres Strait, so in the islands, people, TOs from the island who are living on the mainland here in Australia aren't at the table, not in the conversation. Decisions are being made. And you're disheartened by that, yes?
Oh, of course, yes. Not only myself, there's heaps of people that's in that situation.
Yes. Yeah. And not only your island, all the islands, of course.
That's right. On all the islands.
Mm.
Well,
wherever you travel, whatever you do, you are still a TO of the island, are you not?
Yes. Oh, yes, we are. Until we still have a connection. We have families living back home, and we communicate with them a lot, and we special occasions and, bad times, bad business. That sort of stuff, we all still get together. We still have a connection. We still practice our culture.
Exactly. And when you look at the world we're living at the moment, and look, COVID-19 has exposed that, we can still communicate and have a conversation, be at the table, thanks to social media, all the Zoom conferences and what have you. So there's, you're saying there's no excuse for us not to be at the table.
No, there isn't, no. And this is, the really important part of Indigenous people. We, from the land that we belong to, you know?
Yes.
That's how we recognize as belong to that place.
And that's your given right to have a say.
Yes. It's your duty, as a member of the family for your heritage, you know, to have a say and to claim that place. Doesn't matter how big it is, but... it's gone this far that a lot of us are sick and tired of coming up against the brink wall and not getting any answers.
Mm.
So we've thought about if we can. We have an independent candidate standing for Cook in the next election.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In this election coming up.
Yep.
Yodi Batki. If Vivian can get her on the radio and, you know, just answer a few questions for us.
Sure.
That'd be great. Even if Cynthia is available, she can come.
Who holds the seat at the moment? Seat of Cook. Yep.
Yeah.
Labor
and
Party.
That's only part of the issues that we have. You know, we still have young people in incarceration, in jail.
Yeah.
We still have young people suicide, you know.
And the bottom line is decisions have been made on all facets of life in the Torres Straits, but not including people who are not living in Torres Straits, but still from there, living here in Australia, is what you're saying.
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
And that affects a lot of our young people also.
It does.
And, you know, it's just like being unsettling that they copy what you are. And if we have no recognition or identity, they don't have it either. And it leads to what that fellow was talking about before I come on, you know?
Yes.
All this crime and that sort of stuff getting to go to court.
Mm.
I mean, at least that sort of stuff.
Do you know of to be a board? Can you hear me, George?
Hello.
Yeah, I lost George again. Deep conversation. Sorry, George, lost you again, my friend. Deep in conversation and drama's here on the phone, but we're talking about the situation as people living on the mainland here in Australia from the Torres Straits and are not at the table regarding conversation, what's happening in the Torres Straits. You are still concerned, of course, what's happening with your island and how they're looking after your island, looking after the people, your people living on the island, and don't have a say in the matter. So, yeah, he's requested for candidates to come to the table, have a yarn, tell us, answer some questions, and probably food for thought. We'll just try and catch him and finish the conversation before we've got news coming up. You're there, George, coming to the end here, my brother. Yeah. Thank you. But, so you're asking questions, and you, as people living on the mainland, want to be in the conversation and the decision-making on the island, yes?
Exactly that.
Okay, brother. Well, thank you for your call, and look, hopefully we can get the so-called candidates who are running and answer some questions as you put it to us. Thank you very much, George. But take care. Keep in touch, brother, and keep listening to National Talk Back, brother.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Too deadly. George Yarnup Strong there from Erib, Darnley Island, and his concerns about our decision being made and no communication with people living on the mainland belongs to their island. You know what I'm talking about. Too deadly. Well, Murray, going to sign off your mob. I thank you very much for your company. Back in the hot seat again tomorrow on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. We're live here from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBN Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation. Thanks to NERS. But thank you for your company. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. And more importantly, stay safe. We are still in the pandemic mob. Abide by the rules. The best medicine we got. Too deadly.